bird of passage. Those stolen Africans step out of the ocean from the wounds of the ships and claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those Africans, shackled in leg irons and enslaved, step out of the acres of cane fields and cotton fields and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. Those lynched in the magnolias, swinging on the limbs of the weeping willows, rotting food for the vultures, step down and claim your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your vessel. Those tied, bound, and whipped from Brazil to Mississippi, step out and tell your story. Those in Jamaica, in the fields of Cuba, in the swamps of Florida, the rice fields of South Carolina, you waiting Africans, step out and tell your story. Spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage. From Alabama to Suriname, up to the caves of Louisiana, come out, you African spirits. Step out and claim your stories. You raped, slave bred, castrated, burned, tarred and feathered, roasted, chopped, lobotomized, bound and gagged, you African spirits, spirit of the dead, rise up. Lingering spirit of the dead, rise up and possess your bird of passage.
To you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our requests will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxies. And as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us. Bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We said libation. Libation.
Ronald Greer.
Libation. It is true.
Jerry Hunt. Paul Lewis. John.
That people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Only God can judge me.
That right?
Only God, man. Nobody else.
Nobody else.
All you other motherfuckers, get out of my business.
Perhaps I was blind to the facts. Stabbed in the back, I couldn't trust my own homies. The bunch of dirty rats. Will I succeed? Paranoid from the weed and hocus pocus, try to focus but I can't see. And in my mind I'm a blind man doing time. Look to my future cause my past is all behind me. Is it a crime to fight for what is mine? Everybody's dying, tell me what's the use in trying. I've been trapped since birth, cautious cause I'm cursed. And fantasies of my family in the hearse. And they say it's the white man I severe, but it's my own kind doing all the killing here. I can't lie, ain't no love for the other side. Jealousy inside, make them wish to die. Oh my lord, tell me what I'm living for. Everybody's dropping, got me knocking on heaven's door. And all my memories of seeing brothers bleed, and everybody grieves, but still nobody sees. Recollect your thoughts, don't get caught up in the mix, cause the media's full of dirty tricks. Only God can judge me.
Yeah, baby.
Can make it, got a body full of bullet holes laying here naked still. I can't breathe, something's evil in my IV. Cause every time I breathe, I think they're killing me. I'm having nightmares, homicidal fantasies. I wake up strangling, dangling my bed sheets. I call a nurse cause it hurts to reminisce. How did it come to this? I wish they didn't miss. Somebody help me, tell me where to go from here. Cause even doves cry, but do the Lord care? Trying to remember, but it hurts. So I'm walking through the cemetery, talking to the dirt. Like a man, then live like a coward. There's a ghetto up in heaven and it's ours. Black power is what we scream as we dream in a paranoid state. And our fate is a lifetime of hate. Dear mama, can you save me? And fuck peace, cause the streets got our babies. We gotta eat, no more hesitation. Each and every black male's trapped. And they wonder why we suicidal, running round strapped. Mr. Police, please try to see it. It's a million motherfuckers dressing just like
knowledge does not kill me, can only make me stronger. I don't see why everybody feels as though they gotta tell me how to live my life. Let me live, baby. Let me live.
Pac, I feel ya. Keep serving it on the rim. For instance, say a player hating Martin's out to kill ya. Would you be wrong for bucketing a nigga to the pavement? He gon' get me first if I don't get him. Who start praying? Ain't no such thing as self-defense in the court of law. So judges, when we get to where we're going, we're in the cross. That's real. Got him, linked him, crept the fuck up on him. Sold a half a million tips. Now everybody want him. After talking behind my back like a bitch would. Telling them niggas you could fade. Punk, I wish you would. Them same motherfuckers in your face that'll rush up in your place to get your safe. Knowing you on that paper chase, brass, glass, big screen and leather couches. My new shit is so fatty, already sold a Kia ounce. Bitch, remember Tupac and Forte? Them same two brothers dodging bullets representing the bay. Pop, when you was locked down, that's when I'll be around. Start climbing up the trunk, so sick, but they tried to clown. That's why they ride the bandwagon, still be dragging, selling lies. Don't think I don't see you haters, I know y'all in disguise.
Guess you figure you know me cause I'm a thug. That love to hit the late night club, drinks and buns. Been living lavish like a player all day. Now I'm about to floss some ball players, shit with Vote. Only God can judge me. Only God can judge me. Only God can judge me.
That's real.
Only God can judge me. Only God can judge me.
My only fear of death is coming back to this bitch reincarnated. That's what I only meant. We about.
You are listening to Black Reality. You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Shem Hotep, and good afternoon to all of you, my sisters and brothers. Welcome to the second weekend edition program for the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Saturday evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Central Time. And we're here with my dear brother, Alfonso Watkins, as we have a very powerful discussion that we are about to embark upon. We have a wonderful guest that we appreciate so much for him taking time from his busy schedule to join us as well. You are on the timeforanawakening.com platform, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network system. The Black Reality Think Tank has four other programs that we will talk about at the top of the hour. But right now, we want to get into our conversation and get a chance to meet our guests and move forward. So again, thank you for being with us. We appreciate you. We could not do this without you and your support. So with that, I will now turn the program over to my dear brother, Brother Alfonso Watkins. Good afternoon, Brother Watkins.
Good evening, Baba. How are you doing?
Peace. Great. Doing great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. May I have permission to go forward?
Yes.
Thank you, Baba. Good evening, afternoon, family. It is truly always a pleasure to be with y'all. And once again, we always want to thank you for taking the time out on the Saturday evening at 6 o'clock. It is summertime. We got some beautiful weather for those. So once again, we thank y'all for being in this space with us in this pandemic and at this time of crisis. The urgency of the conversations that we're having with the Black Reality Think Tank family, we think it's critical. I would just like, before we get started, to send out a special prayer, special libation to all of the great-grandparents, grandparents, mothers and fathers, aunts and uncles, our nieces and nephews, our brothers and sisters, our friends, those who have lost their indigenous African minds attempting to navigate their way through this illusion of white supremacy, white affirmative action, white privilege, racism, and discrimination. We ask that the gods, the God of our ancestors, mm-hmm. continue to be with us, continue to support us, and give us the courage to practice Sankofa. And Sankofa just simply means to seek knowledge of oneself and seek divine knowledge that our Creator has implanted with us. And those of us who understand, we say Ashe.
Ashe.
Ashe, family. For those who are not muted, if you could please mute yourself by pressing the star key twice so that we don't get the back noises that come from your environment as we begin this conversation. Once again, this is a collaboration with the Black Reality Think Tank and the Sankofa Council of Elders here in Milwaukee. This is a collective group of Africans who have taken on the responsibility to take control of the narrative in the city of Milwaukee. And we are aware and hope that there are other brothers and sisters who are doing the same thing in the cities across this country. We would like to make connections with other Council of Elders so that we can build local, national, and regional, and as well as an international coalition of Africans on the planet. So part of what we are doing here in Milwaukee is, once again, it's a group. We got brothers and sisters from all walks of life, from the Islamic community, from the African, Pan-African and Black nationalist community, the Kemet Institute, Christian brothers and sisters. So it's a collaboration of us who are putting aside our ideologies as it relates to the reality of us organizing as melanated people to address our conditions, not only in this city, but on this planet as it relates to our relationship of being living under racism. But I would just like to always read off, start off with the purpose of the Sankofa Council of Elders. The purpose of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is to use African principles of unity and cooperation to create a healing environment for our community by addressing environmental and social conditions and human disparities we face. Through the guidance of elders of Sankofa, these principles will provide a unifying ideology for the collective mission of building a unified front with one voice in the city of Milwaukee. The mission, to engage, aid, and assist each other in the continuous development of a movement and network of elders who are governed by the principles of Ma'at and the Nguga Saba, which is the seven principles of Kwanzaa, as we move through the 21st century. The role and function of the Sankofa Council of Elders will be to provide formation of policies and development of programs and services which will contribute to the growth, self-governance, and economic empowerment of African Americans in the city of Milwaukee. The role and mission of the think tanks are to critically analyze our environments and social conditions in this city through research and create proactive strategic solutions to address the circumstances and disparities. Each think tank will consist of members who have a particular interest, level of expertise, and experience within that area of science. Each member of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee will commit to actively participating and or supporting the think tanks. Now, the purpose of the think tanks is, once again, when you think about the concept of what INCOBRA is doing, when you think about the nine areas of human activity that Neely Fuller speaks of in his books, and then also the organizers under the leadership of Minister Louis Farrakhan, when we came back from the Million Man March, there were, I think there were 9 or 10 areas or committees that we were supposed to start. So the think tanks are coming out of that concept of what those areas are. So once again, the first one is spiritual development. The second one is politics. The third is security, defense, and warfare. The fourth is information and media, science and technology, education, health, economics, law and justice, cultural, history, and the arts, labor, jobs, and human capital. So what we are attempting to do here in Milwaukee is create these think tanks and look at how do we begin to use our individual resources, our individual talents and gifts to move us forward, once again, moving through the 21st century. So I'd always like to start off letting individuals know the foundation of our most of our conversations are coming out of that. So once again, thank you all for listening for that. Today's program we're calling it Kill Them Before They Grow. And I chose to listen or for us to hear Tupac. And we truly miss that young warrior because he was evolving out of a certain mindset and resurrecting the a consciousness in our children. So they had to remove him and Biggie. So part of the conversation that we're going to have this evening is the reality of who is they that we're talking about. And so when we say who is they, there's an element in the psyche of the European male that is at war with us. And we can't continue to not call it out and identify what it is. Because if we don't call it out and identify what it is, we won't be able to come up with the necessary tactics and solutions to address the attack that is being implemented on the black male in the black family. So we have to identify that personality, and that's going to be another show that we're going to focus in on the psychopathic and sociopathic personality disorder of the European that has created this civilization that we live under that has reached its peak. So we can't continue to function out of this European social construct because it can't go any higher. And you see the demoralization of the civilization that we live in. So that's part of, once again, of understanding the attack on the black male and understanding why they are attacking the black male. So we have a wonderful guest with us today. I've been knowing Dr. Earl Bracey, I think it was since 97, but I actually started working with him once I got my master's degree in educational psychology and got into the therapeutic field. We was actually doing some cases working with wraparound the Bureau of Milwaukee and the Department of Juvenile Corrections. So this brother has been in the game for a long time, and he has written a wonderful book called Too Young to Die. Inner City Adolescents, Homicides, and the Psychological Autopsy. He wrote this in 2005. So, Dr. Earl Bracey, how you doing, brother?
Very good, very good, Alfonso. I'm glad to be on board this evening. Thanks, Dr. Rogers, as well, for inviting me.
Okay, brother. So, before we get started, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and then go into what prompted you to writing this book?
Well, I've been a resident of Milwaukee since the 1970s. I was born in Alabama, the Deep South, the segregated South. I've seen a lot, heard a lot. I came to Milwaukee, and actually things weren't that much different than in the city of Milwaukee. There are a lot more, more opportunities, but the racism was still there, and it was blatant. I was a part of the civil rights marches with Father Groppi back in the day. I have lots of pictures about that. So I was determined that, as they said, nobody's going to turn us around. I was determined that nobody was going to turn me around, and I was going to fulfill my obligations and my goals. When I came here, I was drafted into the Army. Came very close to going to Vietnam as a combat medic, but I was sent to Germany instead. And I was trained as a surgical technician, and I worked in Milwaukee in the Army as a surgical technician for 3 years. For 8 years at two hospitals here in the Milwaukee area, and I went on to operate the heart-lung machine. I received my bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Wisconsin here in Milwaukee, and went on to receive my master's and doctorate degree from the Illinois School of Professional Psychology and Clinical Psychology. And I've been a practicing psychologist here in Milwaukee for the past 20 years. And as you stated, Alfonso, I've worked with the wraparound program, lots of kids, lots of youth and families. And I guess I've taught them a lot, but they've taught me a lot as well. And I enjoy what I'm doing, and I intend to do a lot more writing. I did write another book. It's called The Making of a Psychologist, but that's something for a different time. So right now, I know we're talking about Too Young to Die, and I'd like to kind of tell people why I decided to write that book. If I can be allowed to do that right now.
Yeah, go for it, big brother.
Okay. Well, you know, back in the 1980s and the 1990s, there seemed to have been an increase in not just adolescent homicides, but homicides in general across the country. And in Milwaukee, we are averaging about 150 homicides per year. And most of these victims and the perpetrators were black. Nationally, there were around 17,000 per year. And half of the victims were black. And we make up only about 13% of the population. Now, this was very puzzling to me. You know, being a student of psychology, I had to try and figure out what was going on here to try and get some answers. I did a couple of practica in addition to my internships, but I did a therapy practicum at a correctional facility, and this is outside of Chicago. And here I worked with teenage girls who had committed homicides, and these were black girls. Their mode of, I guess, fatalism was by stabbing. You know, as most of us know, usually when there's a homicide with the male, it's via gun. You know, with females, it seemed like it was almost always a stabbing. And the girls, young girls who did the stabbing, they didn't stab another girl. It was always a male. So there is a common theme. And in that, there was a lot of anger. And what I saw is that with this anger came a, they didn't really remember a lot about what took place. So as you can see, they're overwhelmed by this anger. I think in our society today, there's we're inundated with anger all over the place. And there's so many variables. And until it's like hard to know where to start to kind of just to unravel it. So I took the position that I would not be able to figure this out by myself, but I felt like other people could latch on to some of the ideas that maybe I started or picked up, and that we could kind of piggyback and help each other out, and together we could figure this out. As I worked in the field of medicine and you know, being around a lot of white people almost always I was only black, I would overhear conversations, and they would say things like, as long as they're not killing us, you know, that's okay. You know, so they were satisfied as long as we're killing each other, but don't come close to them. And other things I heard is that we were genetically criminal in nature. So they saw us as being defective. I saw these things from a different lens. You know, I knew that the variables that they were multifaceted and they needed to be picked apart. So I saw it as we're losing some of our most valuable, I guess you could say, precious natural resources. And these were the kids, the children. So when there was one homicide, you know, there was one black male taken out of society, but there was also the perpetrator. You know, and oftentimes in homicides, I think it's somewhere around 65, 68% of the murders are solved, but the victim was taken out of society and the perpetrator were taken out of society. And I kind of thought about this, and I was finding out that anywhere from 70 to 100 people were affected by these homicides. I wanted to kind of like challenge people's thought processes. And kind of from the book, I wanted to use this as maybe a teachable moment, especially as it relates to the Black experience. And as I said, you know, I came from the South, and as we were doing the libation, I was thinking to myself, all of the slave ships that stopped in the islands, Caribbeans, all around the world, actually. And there were several spots right in my hometown, and near Mobile, Alabama, there is the Port of Mobile. There were several slave ships that came through there. So I think when people can understand this Black experience, maybe they can start to kind of put things together, hopefully, although there are some that will never get it. But in a nutshell, that was kind of my reason for putting this together in the book.
All right. All right. Thank you, brother. The next question I have for you, as we had this conversation as it relates to the behaviors that we're seeing in our young people that are, once again, from a developmental perspective, we don't come out the womb like this. So there is a socialization. There's something happening in our socialization under this European social construct that's social engineering these behaviors. So as I was reading your book, in some of your research in here, it talked about the social variables and social factors, and you brought them up as well. Could you go a little bit more in detail of that? Because once again, like you just articulated, the science that we're functioning under these Europeans is a pseudoscience.
Right.
And so the pseudoscience is, once again, it's not actual science. It's a falsification of information. So we're going to have to function outside of that. But once again, if you could just talk a little bit more about those variables and factors as it relates to the social condition.
Yeah, there's sometimes it's kind of hard to know exactly where to, I guess I could, number one, I could say things are kind of passed down from generation to generation. Think, you know, that discrimination, that segregation has always been there. And I think kids can pick this up. You know, they see their parents being treated a certain way. And in society has a negative view of Blacks in general sometimes. And, you know, when we think back to the busing, you know, the kids who were bused were treated unjustly in a lot of ways. I came to Milwaukee, actually prior to coming to Milwaukee, I lived in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. And the reason I was in Oak Creek is because I had an uncle that actually lived there. And for people that don't know, Oak Creek is a suburb of Milwaukee. And at that time, I think there were two Black families in the city of Oak Creek. And when I started school there, I had come here fresh from Alabama. Supposed to have been in the seventh grade, but they put me back in the sixth grade because they thought that I couldn't do the work. And coming from a Black kid coming from the South, I guess I wasn't supposed to do the work. When they put me back, they kept me in the sixth grade for about 2 or 3 weeks, as far as I can remember. They found out that I could do the work. And in addition to that, I forgot the name of the test, but there is it's a state exam that they give students. So when I took the test, I got like the highest score in vocabulary and reading. Now, I was actually in the sixth grade, but reading on the 12th grade level. So the principal kept me after school, and he made me take the test over again, put me in a room by myself. And he kind of walked by back and forth until I finished. And I got the same exact score on the test. So I think, especially with a lot of our Black boys, that a negative view, you know, of your, of how people see you. And, you know, you can actually pick up on that. And if you don't feel good about yourself, there's what I call that reflective self. You know, you kind of see yourself in the mirror. So I always felt like if, when a homicide occurs, the perpetrator is actually kind of seeing himself in that mirror. The other thing is being in, now I didn't experience this, but my uncles who are, came to Milwaukee before I did, they always told me that in the city of Milwaukee, the black people were only allowed to live between about North Avenue and Walnut. The people who live in Milwaukee know that what that distance is going north and south. And if you go east and west, you could only go as far as Holton up to about, what was it? Well, you could go not past Capitol Drive. So with all of the redlining that took place, people not being able to get loans, even though they had, you know, the income, you know, they were kept out of certain neighborhoods. And this, you know, this is something that it permeates society. It didn't go away overnight. And it was actually by design. You know, there is a book that some of you probably have heard of it, The Color of Law. And they talk about all of these injustices that were sanctioned by the federal government. So, you know, when we're being socialized, you know, as I was listening to some of the news programs, some of the black commentators were saying that when they were growing up, their mothers taught them to something like not, don't put your hands in your pockets. And now it's like when you see a police officer do all the right things, and sometimes when you do all the right things, that's still not good enough because you can still end up getting killed. So that being socialized as a black male can be very difficult. In a society that sees you as less than them. I think the other thing that I see is, you know, we're accused of not having that family. But if you look back in history, the African-American family was very strong, and that was deliberately by design, you know, separated, put into place so that the families wouldn't be there. You know, if you put the mother on welfare and the father in prison, that would divide. That's the divide and conquer technique. So, you know, the kids are looking at that. And, you know, as you grow up, you kind of wonder, what does it do to your self-esteem, your self-concept? You know, you started hating yourself and everybody that's around you, or everybody that looks like you.
So part of as I'm listening to you, once again, within the socialization of being socialized under the European, under this, in this worldview, we have to start talking about the acknowledging and identifying a social policy that were implemented, and you were just mentioning that about the some of the design, the deliberate attack on the black man and black woman in the family. So as the next phase of this conversation, I would like for us to start having some more of a, I'm going to say, solution-type focused conversation, because I think we are doing our children a disservice by not preparing them to be at war with this system and identifying it as that. I think we are too passive in our approach about the nurturing and the socialization of our children, and we are doing them a disservice. And that's why they're so angry with us, because when they get to a certain stage or a certain level of awareness in these early stages, they recognize that they haven't been equipped and they haven't been protected. So the next phase of your book, when you're talking about some of the solutions, which, could you go more into some of that conversation that you were talking about in your book?
Okay, yeah, as far as solutions, I think there, you know, when you talked about getting them prepared, there has to be that maybe stress inoculation, you know, to kind of get them ready for society. I always kind of talk to the kids that I work with, the teenagers, and I ask them if they want to be a cripple man. And, you know, I don't tell them what I mean right away because I want them to think about it. But it doesn't mean that they're going to be in a wheelchair, that they're going to be crippled psychologically and emotionally. So I think, you know, we have to prepare them, not just the males, but the females too. But, you know, if we don't talk about these things early on and try to get them to, you know, even bring in the absent fathers, you know, that's the absent fathers. That, I mean, you know, and I know that being in the mental health field, you know, we see a lot of families, a lot of mothers, and they're doing things by themselves. The fathers are not there. You know, we want to pull them in. I think making them feel welcome, you know, because, you know, if you walk into a family and, you know, a white lady comes into the house and she starts talking to the kids, she starts talking to the mother, even if there's a male in the house, I've noticed sometimes that he's ignored, you know, and that shouldn't be. You know, he's got to be reminded that he's a driving force. He's strong. You know, he's a main component. And when you make men feel that way, and even the boys, you have to empower them to feel the same way. And I think religion, that's another component, something that for whatever reason, you know, a lot of people have gotten away from. It doesn't matter what religion you are, as long as you're believing in something. I think just having that as a guide, you know, as a your compass, you know, and without that, you know, this belief system that you have, you know, if it's shattered, what's going to happen when you become an adult? You know, right. The cycle is going to be repeated over and over again.
I was just going to just elaborate on what you were just talking about when you're talking about the belief system. I'm from a Pan-Africanist and Black nationalist perspective. I think, we're at a critical period where we can't accept or hope that when we create our children that this society is going to accept, and we already see that reality. So what we attempt to do on this show is try to get us to realize we have to start thinking as a free and independent people who are going to be self-determined. And so when you take on that responsibility to be self-determined, there's a paradigm shift in your thought process that you have to make. And so part of what, as we have in this conversation, is the listening audience, is to get us to stop thinking that somebody else is going to fix this. That this society is not going, it's not in their best interest to solve our problems. They benefit on us being dysfunctional. So as we have this conversation, we have to start talking about what type of programs, what type of strategies, what type of institutions we're going to have to create so that we can produce positive, productive males and females who, when they come into that space of a relationship, they understand how to parent. They understand the role of male and female. So as I was listening to you, I was just thinking about the rites of passage in a code of conduct that we have to start functioning under so that we can produce the type of human beings we need to produce.
Right. And you mentioned the rite of passage. We want the rite of passage to be technology, school, colleges, universities. Right now, the rite of passage for a lot of kids is... Well, you know, my uncle went to prison, my father went to prison, so that's what I'm going to do. That's my rite of passage. So all that mindset has to change. It has to shift. And, you know, I was looking at online the other night. I was looking at some of the countries and the cities in some of the countries in Africa. And these were, built and designed by black Africans. And I was in awe. It's like, and I'm sure you've seen them yourself. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful landscaped architecturally. I'm trying to think of something that rivals that in this country. Maybe you know some. I haven't really, maybe Atlanta, I'm not sure, but I haven't seen anything that comes close to it.
Right.
So
right.
It can be done. So we
right.
just have
right.
to start early with that mindset and, you know, knowing, you know, getting people to love themselves and to love each other.
Right.
If that can't happen, nothing's going to change.
Right. Yeah, and we had a, like I said, we had a real critical period in our story, family. And once again, I'm going to keep reiterating this. We have to create the reality that we want to see. And,
right.
and part of that is, once again, looking from a black African developmental perspective and connecting that to Pan-Africanism and African-centered education and African-centered socialization. So when Dr. Brayson, when you brought up the reality of what our brothers and sisters are from an architectural perspective of social engineering of buildings and creating cities, that's innate in us. That's something that is innate. So what we continue to do is we continue to expect these Europeans to create the space for us to reach our fullest God-given human potential. And I think that's where, once again, we're our underdevelopment. We underdevelop in that perspective as it relates to our relationship to these Europeans and understanding their nature. A lot of times they get a pass because we're not talking about the nature of those who have created this system. And then we keep trying to participate in the system in a way like they're going to change. And that's where this avoidance personality come in, that in our development.
Yep.
So we have to get better at that.
Exactly. And I guess dependency needs would be another one, you know. Not expecting people to do things for you. You know, do it yourself. And it's kind of like you probably heard of the elephant mentality. But there's an elephant in captivity and he's had a cane on for forever. You take the chain
mm-hmm.
off, what's the elephant going to do? He's going to stand there for a while because he thinks that he's still in captivity.
Right.
So
right.
that's the mentality that we have to get rid of.
Right. Before we're getting close to a break, but I wanted to read, the next hour, use opportunity for the audience to call in and ask some questions. But I always want to read this definition of culture by Marumba Ani, because I think it's critical that we understand we have to reestablish an African culture and reestablish it in such a way where those of us who are accepting of functioning under this moral conduct of a culture, we can start establishing the necessary institutions that we need. But I want to read this definition. A critical analysis and critical thinking, having a frame of reference to lay a foundation to focus our thoughts. An African worldview is the basis for a conceptual framework for thinking about thought. We must consciously construct a evolving conceptual frame of reference upon which to start a paradigm shift for a new conceptualization toward a new context. Culture is the context for us to establish our collective experience and foundation where life takes on meaning and gives us order and purpose. Culture tells us who we are and what we should be doing. It also gives us a common theme for life. Culture forces the group to think and cooperate with one another. Culture extends the power and progress of the group. Enculturation is implanting a spirit or personality in the individual of the group. And I just want to read that as we go into the next phase of this, as we have this conversation. Part of what a rite of passage does
that's coming out of an African-centered perspective. It gives the individual a collective consciousness of what their role is as it relates to the benefit of the race and of the culture. And so part of, once again, what we have to understand, functioning under a European social construct is foreign to our nature. We are a right. communal people. So we have to start understanding what the difference between an African worldview and a European worldview. Did you want to chime in on that, Dr. Brace?
Are you the question? Are you asking what's the difference?
Well, did you just want to chime in? However you want to respond to it. I mean, however you want to respond to it.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, like I said before, you know, we've been kind of brainwashed in a lot of things, and I think oftentimes people feel like they have to act a certain way because it's maybe the American way or the westernized way, and anything that's black, sometimes they feel like they're there's no association, or they don't want to associate with it, and that's where it comes in loving yourself, knowing your culture, knowing your heritage. And I think if we can embrace that, you know, because like you said, nothing's going to change, you know, unless we make some changes ourselves here. So we have to embrace it and know that, you know, we have to do this ourselves. Nobody else is going to do it for us.
Dr. Rogers, we coming up on the 7 o'clock?
Yes, right?
Yep, so you take over, then we come on back.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, another one of those. This is for my nigga Q. Down to earth, joy and peace, baby. You know how we roll. There's so many that don't know. This goes out to my nigga Q. Rest in peace, baby. What they don't know is the bullshit, the drama, the guns, the armor, the city, the farmer, the babies, the mama, the projects, the drugs, the children, the thugs, the tears, the hugs, the love, the slugs, the funerals, the wakes, the churches, the coffins, the heartbroken mothers. It happens too often. The problems, the things we use to solve them. Yonkers, the Bronx, Brooklyn, Harlem. The hurt, the pain, the dirt, the rain, the jerk, the fame, the work, the game, the friends, the foes, the bins, the hoes, the studios, the shows, comes and it goes. The jealousy, the envy, the phony, the friendly, the one that gave them the slugs, the one that put them in me. The snakes, the grass, too long to see. The lawnmower sitting right next to the tree. Go to jail or get your ass kicked. The lawyers, the part, they are of the puzzle. The release, the warning, try not to get in trouble. The snitches, the eyes, probation, parole. The new charge, the bail, the warrant, the hole. The cell, the bus, the ride, of course. The greens, the boots, the yard, you caught. The fighting, the stabbing, the pulling, the grabbing. The riot squad with the captain, nobody knows what happened. The 2 years in a box, revenge, the plots. The 23 hours that slapped. The 1 hour that's not. The silence, the dark, the mind, so fragile. The wish that the streets would have took you when they had you. The days, the months, the years, the despair. One night on my knees, here it comes, the prayer. Through the night, I was his. It was right what I did. My ups and downs, my slips,
tribulation. My heart, my walls, my mother, my father. I love them, I hate them. Wish God I didn't have them, but I'm glad that he made them. The roaches, the rats, the strays, the cats, the guns, knives, and bats. Every time we scrap, the hustling, the dealing, the robbing, the stealing, the shit hit the ceiling. Little boy with no feeling, the frustration, rage, trapped inside a cage, the beatings till the age, I carried it 12 days. Somebody stop me, somebody come and get me. Little did I know that the law was riding with me. The dark, the light, my heart, the fight, the wrong, the right, it's gone. I
that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We are back, my sisters and brothers. Thank you for joining us here this afternoon at the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. This is the second part of our weekend edition. And we are having a very robust conversation on the condition and the plight of black males in our nation. And this conversation is being led by my brother, Brother Alfonso Watkins, and his guest, Dr. Brazy. And we really appreciate them, and we hope that you will call us if you have questions or statements you'd like to make. Our telephone number is area code 215-490-9832. For all of those that are on the internet listening, our call-in number again is 215 area code 490-9832. And just for the informational purpose, the purpose of this Black Reality Think Tank family, we have three other programs that air as well. What we were attempting to do is to create a conversation platform where the members of the African family can gather and try to address ideas that will and that can implement change and give us a chance to continue the fight for liberation and freedom from this captivity system that has really crippled us. So all voices are welcome. We welcome whether you're male, whether you're female, whether you're a young person, middle-aged, whether you're an elder, whether you're a Baptist, atheist, Muslim, Buddhist, we welcome all members of our faith, whatever social orientation you may be, whatever political affiliation you may be. You're all welcome to this platform. And this platform is called the Black Reality Think Tank Radio Network. And we are here on Saturday, beginning at 3 o'clock, with a program, Black Women Speak. We're a place where you can breathe. And they just completed a very wonderful and dynamic conversation. And then at 6 o'clock, here with my brother Alfonso Watkins. And then on Tuesday, we have the Black Reality Think Tank, where we look at the social, political, economic, and the spiritual paths of our people from a historical perspective. And that program is hosted by myself. And then on Thursday, we have a group of young millennials, young women, four of them, who call themselves After Seven. And they talk about issues that impact them, family, children, relationships, diet, health, a lot of things that embrace young people in this day. So we, again, this is a platform to bring all of the African family together. And I'm so happy that all of you have joined us as well and continue to support what we're trying to do at this program. Real quickly, there are two other programs that I want to mention. One is a program that airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. It broadcasts out of Atlanta, Georgia. And that program is hosted by Motherland Media under the direction of Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, African Perspectives, from 11 a.m. Eastern Time to 1 p.m. And then on Friday and Sundays, on Friday from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, broadcasting out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, we have Time for an Awakening. And that program is hosted by the general manager of the Time for an Awakening network system, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That is from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock Eastern Time. And then on Sunday, they are back on again from 7 to 10, from 7 to 10 Eastern Time as well. And so that is our lineup. This network is a very powerful, and there are other programs on the network as well. We invite you to go to our website at www.timeforanawakening.com. www.timeforanawakening.com. And you will also find an archive system there. You can go into the podcast and pull up the Black Reality Think Tank and all of our programs that have been broadcast are there, and you can listen to them at any point, any time, 24/7, as well as the African Perspectives program, Time for an Awakening, and some of the other dynamic programs that air as well. So with that, again, thank you. We'll be back here next Saturday. We are going to continue this, as I said, very robust conversation, a powerful conversation with my brother, Brother Alfonso Watkins, and his guests. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Brother Watkins.
All right. Thank you, Baba. Thank you. Once again, family, thank you all for staying with us, being with us for the second round of conversation. Kill them before they grow. We are with my good brother, Dr. Earl Bracey, who has written a book called Too Young to Die, An Inner City Adolescence, Homicides, and Psychological Autopsy. Before we get back to him, though, I want to read off some books that I think that are critical for us to study. And once again, there's some conversation out there in the community about we ain't got time to read, but there's going to have to be, I'm calling it the intellectual Africans. We're going to have to create a body of knowledge to develop theoretical approaches to address our conditions and to improve our health outcomes. So no, everybody's not going to read. But those of us who consider ourselves scientists, psychologists, psychiatrists, physicians, all of us who have these different areas of science that we function in, we're going to have to create a universal body of knowledge so that we can create a cultural paradigm for us to function out of. And I think we live in a very critical time for us to make that happen. I mean, we have to acknowledge that the information, the knowledge base that we're functioning out of is clearly inadequate as it relates to for us to be able to solve our problems. In 2020, 400 years of us being in this space, we are still asking the same things that our ancestors were asking for in 1863. So at some point, we're going to have to evolve past the perspective of thinking that this European is even capable of giving us a knowledge base to help us reach our God-given human potential. So part of, once again, those of us who are practicing Sankofa, those of us who are functioning or believe in Pan-Africanism and Black nationalism, I think it's a call to us to create this paradigm, this body of knowledge. So there's a couple of books, I think, for the conversation that we're having about Black male development and once again, helping preparing Black males to be fathers and husbands. We got to start looking at a body of knowledge where we can create this institution. Amos Wilson got two books that I think that are critical. One of them is Understanding Black Adolescent Male Violence by Amos Wilson. And once again, I think this is a real good, it's not a big book, but it's a good book that he lays a good foundation about the abnormalities that we're seeing in Black males. They are functional for the political, economic, and social structure of this system. So once again, we have to begin to understand that the behaviors that we're seeing in our young brothers and sisters, these behaviors benefit the system and is based on social policy. Another book Dr. Amos Wilson has written is called Awakening the Genius of Black Children. Awakening the Genius of Black Children. I think this is a critical book for Black parents to be, and even individuals who have children, for them to start understanding that our children, from a developmental perspective, our children develop differently than everybody else's children. We are a unique group of people, so we can't continue to use other people's theoretical modalities to address the conditions of our children. So Dr. Amos Wilson, these two books are two critical books for parents and individuals who are interested in the development of Black children. Another critical book that I think, and once again, I don't have all of them, but there's some good books out here. Brother Wesley Muhammad in the Nation of Islam has written a real good book on understanding the assault in the Black man, Black manhood, and Black masculinity. And he has done a wonderful job at looking at not just from the external factors that are impacting on Black male development, but the internal factors. And what we mean by the internal factors, the chemical warfare that is taking place on our genetics. The brother has done some research as it relates to a lot of the viruses or the things that we're being injected with, the foods that we are eating, the impact that is having on the genetics of the Black male and the Black female. So his book is a real critical book that looks at the internal and external factors that's impacting Black male development as well. Another real critical book is by Brother M.K.B. Baruti. It's called Homosexuality and the Effeminization of the African Males. And this brother has went back in from a historical scholarly work looking at how homosexuality is is part of the European culture and how that is being implemented as it relates to the culture or function in the society that we live in now, and how Black males have been effeminized as it relates to functioning under or looking at the white males as being dominant and us being passive in this process. So he has done a real good book. This is a real good volume on that context from a historical perspective. It's a thick read, but it's a good read. And the last book I just want to share with y'all is, if we talk about killing before they grow in homicides, is understanding that we got to teach our young brothers, and Dr. Gracie talks about it in his book, about the reality of a homicide is really a suicide. And this is the military talking to in front of my military experience. Anytime you kill someone that looks like you in warfare, that's not a homicide, it's suicide. And so we have to start helping and teaching our young brothers that the environment that they are attempting to function in, this hostile environment, is a war environment, but we are internalizing it in such a way where we are self-destructive. And so we have to create the spaces to help these young brothers build up the spiritual, psychological, and physical immune system to function in this environment, in this hostile environment. And we got to create a buffer between them. But Brother Khalil G. Muhammad wrote a book called The Condemnation of Blackness. And he has done a wonderful job in looking at race crime in the making of a modern America. And his book really goes into depth at looking at the social policy, the social engineering of the sciences, journalism, and media, and how that has created the imagery of black males and criminality and the demonization of us. So once again, these are just some books. And once again, I think individuals, once you start to read, it'll open up your understanding about the condition of our people, and then you will have a perspective as it relates to not blaming us for our condition, but recognizing the assault that is being implemented on us from a continuous historical perspective, but also understanding it from a domestic terrorism perspective, because we are being terrorized domestically living amongst these Europeans, and that's what we're seeing now as it relates to, and it's continuous with the police killing of black males. So I'm gonna move on and let Dr. Bracey get into this with the conversation. The next conversation with Dr. Bracey is having a conversation about what you're seeing now, because you wrote your book in 2005 and here it is 2020. What do you see now?
Okay, Alfonso, before I get into that, I'm going to make a comparison, but I want to, there's a short paragraph from my book that I just picked up. It's by W.E.B. Du Bois, and this was written in 1904. And he says, "The Negro is a sort of seventh son, born with a veil and gifted with second sight in this American world. A world which yields him no true self-consciousness, but only lets him see himself through the revelation of the other world. It is a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity." So, to answer that question, I think today it hasn't gotten any better. In 2005, we would have thought that the homicide rate would have come down considerably. And it's kind of interesting that in the middle of a pandemic, it's going even higher. You know, the homicide rate in Milwaukee is increased by 100% from last year. I think that that anger, that rage, that tension, you know, the strain, it's still there. You know, even maybe there have been some improvements socially, but they've been short-lived, you know, because we're still not respecting each other. You know, so this... you know, the outcry that we have... when we're killed by a police officer, you know, we should have that same outcry and that same marching, the same protests, the demonstrations. And it seems like it lasts for maybe a week or two where people are outraged, and then we go back to the same routine, the same status quo. You know, we cry a little, and we kind of just move on like nothing's happened. But again, you know, every time there's a homicide, there are like 50 or more people affected. And just multiply that and see how much anger and hurt, you know, and despair that there is across, not just in this city, but across the country. Mm-hmm. So there's still lots of work to be done.
Yeah. All right, Doug. Hey, Doc Rogers, is there, you can open up for questions, comments, if individuals out there want to do that?
Okay, we'll find out. Let me go over here to Brother Lush. He's always a guest, so we appreciate his remarks. Brother Lush, are you listening to this day, or you want to make a comment or question?
No, I'd like to make a small comment. And Brother Watkins, thank you so very much for the work that you do. And it's a pleasure meeting you by phone, Dr. Gracie.
Thank you.
First of all, let me just say that I wanted to give all honor and praises to our ancestors, to Brother C.T. Vivian and John Lewis for their transition to the ancestral realm, and to acknowledge that. But the one thing that I'd like to direct to Dr. Gracie is for us as human beings, Dr. Gracie, as melanated people, we have to know ourselves. The ancient proverb is to say, know thyself. In that, can black people ever get the chance to admit to themselves, first of all, that they may have had failure, to be able to accept the failures at this point in their lives and to be able to change the dynamic? You know, it has to be at some point that one has to look themselves into the mirror and say, you know something? I messed up. I did wrong. I should have known better. Can we ever get black people to do that, to start to see the progression since the writing of your book some 15 years ago? What do you think?
Well, that one's kind of deep, and I guess it depends on, you know, what the situation is, first of all. And I think, yeah, this is something that goes back to teachings in childhood. You know, we have to be comfortable with ourselves, you know, in our bodies, as you said, in our melanated bodies, which I think is beautiful. We have different hues. And that's the thing that I like people to know. You know, we talk about, well, he's darker than I am, or I'm lighter than he is. And, you know, I think a lot of that is insignificant, you know, because we're all, we have melanin. And I think I was with a group of people yesterday, and one of the people in the group made the comment that, well, I don't have to stand in the sun because I have my year-round tan. And it's kind of funny, but, you know, and I think you should be proud of that. To get back to your original question, you know, I think sometimes that's a person's personality makeup. You know, people, they don't have a problem with accepting a wrong or apologizing or admitting a mistake. Other people do. But I think when you're taught from like an early age, you know, how to actually engage in conversation, how to be apologetic, you know, how to admit that you're wrong. That's where it all starts, I think. You know, it's something that you have to be taught sometimes. You know, and maybe a person feels like if they say that they're wrong, that they're weak. You know, and that's another problem that we have. We don't like to admit that we're weak about things sometimes. So, again, that's something else that we should work on, I think, as a people, too. Admitting, you know, a weakness. You know, I've seen at funerals, you know, women will cry, but they'll take out a tissue or handkerchief or whatever. And I've noticed that with men, sometimes if there's a tear coming down, they'll just let it flow because they don't want to have too much pride to put their hand up to the face to say that I'm crying. So maybe changing that mindset early on. And as Alfonso said, you know, that Afrocentric stance, you know, to embrace it, to teach it, you know, early on. And, you know, I really do think that that's something that we should latch on to. you know, and don't be afraid or don't be ashamed, you know, of where we came from.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Gracie. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so much, Brother Lush. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dr. Rogers, before you go forward, I want to just, for Brother Lush and for the listening audience, Dr. Wade Nobles got a book out called Africanity and the Black Family, the development of a theoretical modality. The book is called Africanity and the Black Family, the development of a theoretical model by Dr. Wade Nobles. And the reason I bring that up is just to say that we don't necessarily have a individual experience. Our experience is a collective experience living under white supremacy. So we can't we can't necessarily say I have a failure because we have not been given the equal access to resources to even know if we gonna fail. We've already been cut out the game. So I'm just saying we have to have a paradigm shift and our perspective of how this reality of living under these Europeans is impacting our personality development. So I just wanted to share that with you. So
thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, brother. Peace and blessings to you.
Okay, no. Let's go. We have, we have one of the co-hosts from one of our other programs that's on. Ms. Chambers, are you listening or do you want to say something? Ask the question.
Hey, Dr. Rogers.
Yes.
Hey, Brother Alfonso. And hey,
hello.
Dr. Rice.
How you doing?
Hi, how are you doing?
This is a great discussion, and I just have to say I'm highly aligned with what you gentlemen are talking about. We definitely need to get back to the Afrocentric methods. We really have to recognize that we have been socialized for so long with the European construct and really take that back to home base. And so in order for us to do that, you know, we're really going to have to look at developing our own schools for these children, because this is not readily available knowledge to their parents. And so I think Dr. Rogers would agree, this is why we come up with this concept of the Saturday school, because this needs to be looked at from a family approach. Because what ends up happening is when these children become smarter than the parents, they begin to become the parents, and the parents try to assert themselves with these children, and the balance of power is now shifted. But if this was something that was going on where they were working together towards this goal, I think that would be, we'd be doing something twofold. We'd be doing something kind of what we were talking about in the podcast prior to this one, but that engagement piece, you know, families have stopped engaging with one another. And so that also puts a yield on the collectivism perspective. And we got everybody in our house in silos and this individuals. And so that's what I would contribute to that discussion. I like what y'all doing and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, sure. And she, thanks. You brought up a good point. I think about some of the commercials that we see on television. If you look at the power differential with the between the parent and the child, sometimes you think that the, like she said, the kids are so smart that they're trying to take over the conversation. They're telling the parents what to do. And if you notice, the next time you see a commercial, it'll stand out. So yeah, that and the education piece, that's very important. We have to accent education over and over again. And I think also connecting with you know, people that are came here later on from the African countries. I think they have lots to offer as well, and making those connections are very important.
All right. And I just want to mention Ms. Chambers, in the beginning of the summer, did conduct a Saturday school program along with her other co-hosts, Ms. Williams and myself. Very successful. We had both parents and young people that attended. We had about 12, 15 people. And you're right. And we just simply taught the principles of mind. and it was a very successful program, and they were enlightened tremendously. So you're right, Ms. Chambers, we have to do more of those Saturday at Cadre schools. Okay, we have another person who from time to time co-hosts things on the Black Reality Think Tank. Her name is Ms. Benisa Ayan. Just last Tuesday, she did a host program with a lady that she calls Nana Mawia, who many of us know her as Dr. Mawia Cambone, who was the former president of the Association of Black Psychologists, and that was a powerful program. So let me see if Sister Ayan, do you have any questions or comments, or are you just listening?
Oh, I definitely have comments.
Okay, all right.
Definitely have a comment because this topic is something that I am extremely committed to doing the work on and continuing in this discussion. So first I want to greet everyone, Dr. Rogers and Brother Alfonso and the doctor that's on. I wrote your name down because I forget names. Is it
Dr. Gracie?
Okay, Dr. Gracie. Yes. Dr. Gracie, thank you so much. Excuse me?
I said, hey, Queen Warrior. How you doing? Hatta up there.
Oh, my brother, I'm good. How are you doing, Brother Warrior?
All right.
So when you played DMX, I'm old school, but I love DMX. I love his music and his, you know, lyrics and whatnot. Some of it is crazy, but it's just raw and it's real. Mm-hmm. And when you played him, and this relates to what I want to say, this brother, as hard as he is and as raw as he is, I listened to one of his interviews, and the man started talking about how he grew up in foster homes and juvenile centers, how his mother abused him and rejected him. And, you know, as he was talking, I could see the emotion coming through. And at some point, you know, the tears started falling. And he said, everybody needs to be somebody's baby.
Mm.
Nobody, he was nobody's baby. Nobody loved him like that. And his whole career has been self-destructive, because he's been addicted to crack for many years. And so that brother taught me a lot by listening to his story. And it's one of hundreds of stories that I've heard over the years. And so I mean, that was just perfect what you played for me in terms of what I want to share. As I've shared many times, I grew up in the 60s and the 70s when Black nationalism was strong. Nation of Islam was strong. So we do have models that we can use to teach our people what we're talking about right now. We have the models. We have the blueprints. We have everything. I was even thinking about when James Brown came out with the song, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, how all over the nation, everybody grabbed onto that. And we were wearing dashikis, and it just spread. You know, Black pride and whatnot, doing for self. James Brown was talking about it. He didn't have a whole lot of education, but he was saying, I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking about what happened from then till now, because, again, we have the models and the blueprint. And as I'm reading about Jim Crow and as I continue to study Jim Crow and the different phases we've gone through, integration and whatnot, one of the things that I see that I would like to see us talk about more is communication. Because what I'm understanding is that during the Jim Crow era, communication was shut down. Of course, during slavery, it was totally shut down, but communication between the youth and the elders was shut down, so a lot of the things that needed to be communicated did not happen. Because of the extreme terrorism during integration, you know, with the fighting and you know, the struggle for so-called equity or whatever, you know, we were asking for, we were too busy with the struggle to communicate with our children, to the young ones, and to pass down, you know, what we need to know to detach ourselves from this lunatic society. And I also see that there's been a pattern of lack of love that's been passed down in our community. So it kind of goes to what Brother Lush was saying. We do have to take onus for what we stopped doing, what we didn't do, what we didn't know how to do. Because some of this stuff that we're talking about, a lot of it can be, we can start the process en masse with the masses if we go back to organizing, learn some communication, because we hadn't done that very well, and instilling, teaching our people how to love each other in a healthy way. Love is not giving your children everything that they want materially. And a lot of young people think that that's love, you know, and some of the other ways that we confuse love. So that's what I wanted to say. And just very quickly, I was on the phone earlier talking with a young man, two young men who were in battle, conscious young men. And one young brother was threatening the other, threatening to kill him. Now, they're both working in a conscious community. And so as I heard both sides, what I learned was that the brother that was threatening to kill the other brother was somebody who had to raise, he said, I raised myself since I was 9 years old. I'm the only one that I had. And this other brother, it slipped out. This other brother looks like he's born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And yes, the other brother, you know, educated and looks, you know, dresses very well, et cetera, et cetera. And I heard some jealousy. I heard some jealousy come out. And that's why he wants to kill the brother. So I'll leave with this. As I said last week, we've got to understand what's going on inside of our young men's hearts and their minds, and go back to what we did during nationalism, black nationalist period. I hope I didn't talk too long, but that was all me. And if the brother, the doctor, would respond, please.
Okay. Yeah, you brought it together really well there. I like the part about love. Love is very important, you know, and I tell the parents that I work with, put two things together, love and discipline. You know, don't try to discipline without love. There's a theory in psychology, I think the person that brought who's responsible for this theory is, his name is Winnicott. He talks about the good enough mother. A good enough mother is doing everything, nurturing the child, doing what she needs to do. There's a counterpart to that I came up with. It's called the good enough father. You know, what if the father is not there? If the father is absent, then you don't get that good enough father to help the child along. So if the mother, like the young lady said, if that young lady or young man is getting things that they want, just because, you know, we're given like material things, but we're not given the love. That's when we run into problems somewhere before the kid becomes an adult. So we want to make sure that that's modulated somewhere. And I think, I feel like we had a me generation, and during the mean generation, I think we, as black people, we were trying to maybe emulate what we saw in white society. If I get this and I have this, I need this, I'm going to, this hedonistic tendency, you know, if I have it, it's going to make me feel good. I'm going to give it to my kids because I didn't have it. And I think sometimes we had to make sure that they earn it or they understand it and appreciate it. If they don't, they just keep asking for more and more. During the protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, I think I noticed the communication seemed like it was more open. Before that, I was a little bit in doubt because I saw a lot of young people marching. I thought that was good across the country and even across the world. So having that communication and not having a disconnect between the young and the old. We can establish that because the young can learn from the old and the old can learn from the young in good ways. So, you know, these are things I think that are very important.
Okay.
All right.
Let's see. We've got 414.
581 caller, are you listening or would you like to say something?
Listening.
All right. Thank you very much. 414-736. 414-736. Are you listening or would you like to say something? Okay. Just listening. Sister Beattie, would you like to say something? 414-429.
I'm just listening. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good enough. 414-416. 414-416. Would you like to say something, Carla? Are you listening?
Listening.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, Brother Alfonso. You've covered the water.
Okay. I'd just like to follow up on and bring some of the questions, follow up with some of the questions. As we are having this conversation about black males and in the context of the black males, the conversation about our young sisters as well, we have to begin to understand the culture that we're functioning under manufactures your desires, our desires. And so when your desires are being manufactured by a foreign culture, it creates these maladjustment personality disorders that we're seeing in our children and in ourselves. So part of what we have to understand is when we start practicing Pan-Africanism or black nationalism and being educated under an African-centered education, our values, our interests, and principles change because we will learn how to function in spirit. We will learn how to function as a collective group of people. We will learn how to not to function in materialism. So part of what we have to understand, that's why we have, like the Queen was saying, we have to go back to the black nationalism and the Pan-Africanism to build from that and look at what were the pros and cons of how they came in and interrupted the communication. So a lot of times when we have these conversations, we're not talking about it from a war perspective. We have to begin to understand and over-understand we are under attack. So whenever we are making progress, when we are making improvements, they always put out some... It's always
this conference has reached its maximum duration and will end in 1 minute.
So it's always social policy that's being implemented that interferes with us being able to move forward. So that's why I was saying we don't have an individual experience. So when we talk about this, we have to look at it from that perspective. So you have anything you want to add to that, Dr. Bryson?
What I had kind of jotted down here, I know a lot of what I notice with a lot of the kids that I work is they have an issue with the word no. So accepting if they can't get something, they're impatient, they want it right away. So I think we need to kind of teach them that they have to, that gratification, immediate gratification versus delayed. And as far as getting along with others, I'm seeing a lot of social anxiety. You're probably seeing that as well. As a matter of fact, a lot of teenagers.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
You know what, Alfonso? All of a sudden, it said the show is now over or something. I mean,
it just cut off. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
We're back on.
Dang, get my glasses. What time is it?
We're back on. That was an interference.
Okay.
Yep. That was an
interference. Hold up.
Brother Alfonso, you still there?
Alfonso?
Brother Alfonso?
He was on there, Bubba.
Yeah, he still see his number here.
Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, this is, I'm Brother Alfonso, but yeah, I just told Dr. Gracie to call back.
Okay, yeah, that was an interference. Not quite sure where it came from, but that was one.
Right.
We didn't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's part of what I was just talking about as well, is that anytime we have a conversation that is moving the frequency, they are going to interrupt it. So part of the COINTELPRO is they still are implementing that warfare on us.
That's right.
It's still being implemented. So we have to want to understand once again, and I'm not talking about all Europeans, but there is an element of them that is at us, and we going to have to get at them. We can't continue to be passive about this. We can't continue to just assume or wait for them to do something. We're going to have to start being more self-determined, moving in the direction that we need to be moving in to change these conditions. Hello?
Yep. That's very true. You know, it's working together and coming together and sticking together.
Right.
Yep.
So, Dr. Rodgers, anybody else out there? Does anybody have any other people out there with questions or comments?
There are no new callers on. No, you go right ahead. We've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay. I also wanted to share three more books. And once again, part of what we have to understand is in order to get a paradigm shift, or to modify our behavior, we have to start functioning out of an African knowledge base, an African-centered education. So some more books that deal with black male development and black female development. Dr. Naeem Akbar got three. They not no big reads, but they some powerful reads. One of them, I don't even know if this one's still in print, Natural Psychology and the Human Transformation, by Dr. Naeem Akbar. Real good book for, once again, getting individuals in tune with or looking at things from an African-centered perspective, but also looking at how we are developing from a developmental psychology perspective. Another book by Dr. Naeem Akbar is Know Thyself. Is another good book that he's written. And another one is Vision of Black Men by Naeem Akbar. So those are three books that I think individuals need to read and share these books with young brothers. I've been working with young brothers for the last 25 years, and I have always given them the Community of Self book by Naeem Akbar to start off the paradigm shift, to start modifying their behaviors, for them to start looking at themselves through a different lens and understanding the external factors that's impacting and having an influence on how they see themselves. So once again, another book by Dr. Naeem Akbar is the Community of Self book. So as we look forward, Dr. Bracey, the next question I have for you with the time that we have, most of us have been working here in Milwaukee for, like I said, over 20 years. What I've noticed within the context of doing therapy with youth, male and female, is the reality that they have been on these pharmaceutical drugs at early on in their stages of development. And the struggle of helping them learn how to function in their natural impulses is where I'm noticing with talk therapy, we're going to have to go to a whole nother level with understanding the impact of how that's affecting their brain development. Could you touch on that?
Yeah, there's still a lot of research on it. You know, a lot of those medications, that they actually weren't designed for kids. They were designed for adults. So in taking them, there has to be some type of maybe brain chemistry shifting. And I know you've seen it where, in some of the boys where they've developed the breasts.
The Respidol.
Right. Yeah, from Respidol, right. And I've noticed that the kids that I work with, they've been on it sometimes since about the age of six. You know, that's, as you know, that's the age that they start to put them on it. And oftentimes they're on it for the duration. You know, it's like when I say the duration, from the age 6 and sometimes up until like 18. So I kind of wonder, you know, if I was taking medication like that, what would I be like past 18? You know, there's got to be a shift or something different about you. And all of the side effects. You know, I've seen the side effects, and sometimes people will still push it and ignore the side effects. You know, and if you're trying to put yourself in their shoes, you know, what would it be like? You know, if you're getting these side effects, and you're getting headaches, you're getting stomach aches, your legs shaking, and things like that. The other things, I've talked to a lot of kids, and they say, well, I don't want to take it because when I'm at school, it makes me feel like I'm not part of the group. And that's true, because I've heard that a lot. You know, it's kind of like there's a circle, but when they start the medication, they feel like they're on the outside of the circle. Yep. So kind of getting, I don't know, I think this is something that's going to be like they're going to take a look at in years to come. You know, it's kind
of... Part of what I'm saying in this conversation is that we ain't got that time. Our children don't need to be on those. So we have to come up with a different theoretical orientation to look at how do we begin to address our children's behavior. And we can see the impact on the children that have been taking it because it interferes with their impulse control, their emotional regulation, their reasoning, comprehension. So we're going to have to come up with a different approach. We can't continue to allow the society to put these, for our children to be taking these poisons, and we don't have enough research to show what's the benefits or the pros and the cons of it. And we can, once again, we can see the impact based on how our children are functioning in society now, because they go from those drugs to the street drugs.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's poisoning and killing our babies.
So once again, we have to recognize that we have to take some ownership of how this process of the development of our children is taking place, and looking at the impact of the coming through the foster care system, going through the juvenile corrections, transferring into the adult, how the socialization or educational component of all public school systems are the curriculum that they've been exposed to. We can already see the impact of that, of the type of human beings that's being produced. Mm-hmm. So I'm just challenging us from the perspective of we see what's happening. When are we going to be mature enough to recognize that we got to start doing some things differently?
Well,
any other callers come back, Dr. Rogers?
No, but I do want to ask both of your questions. You probably don't have enough time to really get into the answer of this. But as you're talking about creating something that can, combat what you all see on a daily basis in your work, somehow or the other, I equate a lot of what we're talking about to very similar what's going on with COVID-19. Where both the medical as well as the business community is out trying to come up with a vaccine that can control this thing. And somehow or the other, I see this very similar because there are so many other factables and variables, and you talked about some of the very variables, marijuana, the media, liquor, 40 ounces, beer, and all of this is being incorporated into our community and into our children. And they are using these, they are trying to function after smoking about 4 or 5 marijuanas, drinking some beer, going then sitting down and listening to some of this awful music that you hear being programmed into their ears, that they're walking around with this, all this technology that's available to them. And it's all self-destruction. So don't we need to, at the same time while we're trying to create that understanding, is that there needs to be some studies done how to combat that marijuana, the potency of marijuana, and, and liquor and malt liquor and all these things that we see that we know that are happening on a day-to-day basis. Oh, yeah. I was looking at my neighbor the other day. He's a young kid sitting out on the stoop, high as he could be. Had a couple of 40 ounces and three dice. He was throwing the dice up against the wall, high as he can be. And it's a behavior that is going to continue to be catastrophic, and it's going to create problems. So how do you all look at that? How do you see that as in the psychotherapy profession?
Well, I would first say it seems like there's been a, I'll try to, I know we have like 3 minutes, so I'll give you time, Alfonso.
No, you can close it out, Baba. You can close it up.
Okay, yeah, it just seems like a lot of the kids that I work with, there's sort of a mutation, you know, how they're saying that the coronavirus has mutated somewhat. It's like the kids that smoke, it's like they're immune. I kind of, sometimes they smoke it before they go to school, during school, and I kind of figure, I'm wondering how are they able to stand up, because it's supposed to be a lot more potent than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. So it seems like it's their way of coping with the world around them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I know sometimes this is, there are stressors and there are ways of coping, but you know, with the music and the marijuana and everything else, it's like there's so much going on until there's kind of like a virtual. There are two worlds, two realities. One real, and for them, their virtual world seems to be their world of reality. So that's what they deal with, and that's what they live in sometimes. So trying to get to them and trying to, like, get them to, like, be motivated, and I know that, Alfonso, I'm sure you've run into the same thing. It's frustrating sometimes because you work hard, but sometimes you feel like you're just not getting through. You're working against the other competition that's there.
Right.
So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah. It is a challenging place to be in. What I'm going to suggest that we do is we're going to continue this conversation.
Oh, yes.
We're going to continue it. We're going to come up with some solutions, some implementation things that we can start to implement. But once again, Dr. Bracy, once again, I truly appreciate you taking the time out to be with us. Once again, Dr. Earl Bracy, his book is Too Young to Die, Inner City Adolescent Homicides, A Psychological Autopsy. Dr. Earl Bracy, you say you got another one coming out, a revised edition in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, the other one's The Making of a Psychologist. It's being revised as well.
Okay, all right. Once again, brother, thank you for spending this time with us. Baba, Dr. William Rogers, once again, thank you for sharing this case. And this is important, thank you all.
Good.
Doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy. It takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version hung with the wrong person. Got a strong on that. Sniffing up drugs all in her nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep and the crowd you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hand in the air and take the vow. I know I can,
I know I can,
be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be.
I'll be